Well, welcome in, folks. It's the Rugby Pass podcast. Today is Wednesday, the 12th of October. It certainly is where I am anyway. And it is Tuesday, the 11th of October, where our guest today is Tom Hamilton from ESPN Scrum joins us on the Rugby Pass podcast. A good evening to you, Tom.
Hello, Simo. How are you doing?
You're as enthusiastic as ever about talking to me, I can tell. I need more enthusiasm from you. This is the problem with English rugby. I need more enthusiasm.
It's when you look out and it's about 3 degrees, it's dark, the whole lot, and it's probably going to rain, snow, the whole lot. So it's just kind of, this is my ray of sunshine today, Sumo.
You are hunkering down for winter, and I like that. And the club's hunkering down for the opening matches of the Champions Cup. The European Championship gets underway this weekend, Tom. I'm going through the pools here. I want to start with a pool discussion. I'm thinking pool 5 might be the hardest pool to call. That is Clermont, Bordeaux, Exeter and Ulster. I like that pool. That pool is exciting to me.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, in that pool, you have the best player in Europe, which is Charles Pietel. You've got the entertainers, Bordeaux. You've got Clermont, who are going great guns in the top 14 at the moment. You've got Exeter, who started the season perhaps a little bit slowly by their own standards. But I think, you know, once they get their good, like their best players back, get Henry Slade pulling the strings, get Jack Noel fit when he's not doing his judo, and then you're off and flying.
Yeah, we're going to get on to the judo sessions in just a moment. Going through the rest of these pools, though, probably the big match, the most talked about match, comes in pool 3 this weekend. Toulon taking on Saracens. It's a tough pool, that one as well. The Scarlets there representing the Welsh and Sale, who haven't been a force in English Premiership rugby for a long time, but both Sale and the Scarlets are capable of a little bit of a jutterbar, a little bit of a hiccup for those big clubs.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think last weekend I was at the Wreck on Friday night to see Bath versus Sale. Sale, by their own standards, were really, really poor. The previous weekend, they knocked over Leicester with a bonus point victory. So there you have the sort of the two extremes of what these Sharks are capable of. In terms of the Scarlets, you know, when they get going, they can be the great entertainers. People like Scott Williams, such a good player. You've got John Davis there, well-established British and Irish Lion. You got Wayne Pivak, the coach, who's well known to New Zealanders. So they've definitely got the capability there to do something. But I think if you look at Toulon and Saracens, you've got Toulon sort of at the next year, and you've got Saracens, who are just the best team in Europe at present.
Yeah, I totally agree with you, mate. Look, elsewhere in this Champions Cup, pool 2 to me, Toulouse and Wasps in the same pool. Connacht, let's not count them out, given their victory in the Pro 12 last year, and Zebre is there for bonus point takes, that's for sure. But the Toulouse-Wasps rivalry in pool 2 will be one to watch.
Absolutely. I think, again, Wasps are probably the favourites there to go through. Wasps kind of learnt a valuable lesson, I think, last weekend against Saracens, but they've still got Kirkby Bill and Willie LaRue to come back. And then in terms of Toulouse, they're currently 6th in the top 14. So they're kind of off the pace, and I think they're going through a transition period at the moment. The likes of, you know, Toby Flood's expected to leave at the end of the season. And then it's a case of, and Tulafua, actually, they're a very gifted hooker. He's off the Saracens. So if you're looking at that pool there, I think you're looking at Wasps really to be driving that one. Zebre, I mean, the Italians find it so difficult to get any sort of momentum, both in the Pro 12, international and so forth, and I can't see that changing anytime soon there. And then you've got Connacht, who, again, have started the season slowly, but they've got a really, really canny coach. They've got a team there who knows what it takes to win the title, and they'll fancy their chances of causing the odd bitch or upset, which is a bit of a strange thing, talking about a Pro 12 champion. But that's what it will be if they end up knocking over Wasps.
Oh, I totally agree with you, mate. We moved to pool 1, and you know I've got a soft spot for my Leicester Tigers, my friend. But what a wonderful pool this is. Glasgow, who are in the ascendancy, I think, as a force. You've got Munster, who have been there, done that before. And Quarterzone 92, otherwise known as Russing, will be making up that pool. So yeah, some big clashes there and a lot of different styles of footy. And I think that's the joy of the Champions Cup. When you look at these teams, they all go into the draw. They all come out with their own brands of rugby. But I think pool 1, given what the Tigers do, their forward-dominated play, given what Munster have done over the years and what Russing can do with the stars they have, this is a really exciting pool for me.
Yep, bang on there. Russing 92, French champions. When they get going, they're unbelievable. Like to Dan Carter and so forth, pulling the strings there. Munster, they're showing really good signs of improvement under Razzie Erasmus. So they, I mean, they're way off their sort of mid-noughties best when they had the likes of Paul O'Connell, Peter Stringer, Ronan Agar and so forth. Glasgow have the potential to be the great entertainers with Hogg, these sort of guys there doing what they can do. Finn Russell when he's fit. And then Leicester, kind of a slow start to the season for them. But then they have probably, in my view, one of the top sort of two inside centres in the world coming at some point, Mats Møller, who's just so gifted. But when he doesn't get front foot ball, then they're absolutely laughing, because Møller, in my view, can do absolutely anything. He's made for the Champions Cup in the same way, you know, definitely made for Super Rugby. But if you're taking a Southern Hemisphere import, well, export to him, which way you look at it, import into the Champions Cup, then it will be, I mean, Tamura is just going to absolutely love it.
Yeah, what I like about that move for Tamura too is he gets to be coached by Aaron Major, and we know how good and how analytical Aaron is. And a similar position, a midfielder coaching a midfielder. I see Matt Tamura growing leaps and bounds with this club.
I completely agree. And he's such a gifted player. We saw the impact he had. I think it was in the third test when he finally came back from injury against England last summer. Similarly, in the autumn, I think the autumn before last, Tamura was just unbelievable. Mm. He is the man. And then Aaron Major, I mean, he knows a thing or two about inside centre.
Yeah, right.
He's really helping these guys come on. I mean, there's a try at the weekend scored by Veanu, which kind of had that sort of Aaron Major heads-up approach to it. So Veanu basically just ran through the whole of Worcester and then the Warriors as well, all in one. He was basically, you know, that sort of try, backing yourself, like Peter Beetham as well.
Yeah.
It's really, really exciting, JP Peterson. So Tamura's just going to love it there.
I love Veanu on the weekend, and also Sean Maitland, and no coincidence that both of those players coached by Aaron Major during their days with Canterbury and the Crusaders. But we move on to the final pool for the Champions Cup. Tommy, Cast, Leinster, Montpellier and Northampton. Do you know, I look at this pool, and on reputation, it should be one of the best, but I can't get my head around some of the style of play here. Montpellier, we know, is looking to purchase. They're in the market for players. Aaron Cruden has been linked with the club. Northampton just continue to battle along without ever really impressing. And Leinster, I think, in a similar way to Munster, a little bit low on where they have been in the past.
Yeah, that's very fair. Montpellier, they're going through a slightly strange time, almost like a purgatory thing. They're kind of on the verge of getting divorced with Jake White and then bringing in the new wife of Vern Cotter. So I'm not quite sure if they know whether they're coming or going. And then with Northampton, they were dreadful against Harlequins on Saturday. I was there for that. They were really, really poor by their high standards. But then they still have, you know, George North, these sort of players. They've got JJ Hamrahan and Dylan Hartley to come back from injury. And then Leinster with dear old Stuart Langster there as their new defence coach.
Yeah.
Once they get going, you know, they've got this promise, but we haven't seen Sean O'Brien in so long. Rob Carney seems to be kind of refining his best form at the moment. Mm. Sexton as well. Get them front foot ball and they'll be off and running. But again, it's just a case of kind of getting this pool going. I think out of all of them, the sort of pragmatism of Montpellier might fare the best there. But I think Leinster, you know, they're slowly finding some sort of magic there again. They got a really nice bunch of young players coming through. So Leinster will probably, I think, probably have the best chance of topping that one.
Yeah, well, they do love Champions Cup footy, that is for sure. You're on the Rugby Pass podcast. It is Wednesday, the 12th of October. We're counting down to the start of the Champions Cup, but of course, all the other competitions in full swing. And also with us today is Tom Hamilton, editor of ESPNScrum.com. And Tommy, I guess now our sights are getting set on the autumn internationals and international rugby returns to Europe, which I think is exciting for a lot of fans. But given what we've seen over the last couple of weeks, the drama of Eddie Jones's two-day camp with the English squad, the injuries that resulted from that camp, the reaction of some of the Premiership clubs, what do you make of the club attitude towards these November internationals?
It's a really interesting one because everything was going so well and then a player gets injured and then everyone's like, oh, didn't expect that from a training session. At the end of the day, this is a deal signed off between Premiership Rugby and the RFU. They signed everything off. So Eddie Jones has given the players for a set amount of time. What he does with them is up to him. So, of course, he's going to try and put them through some sort of rigorous training sessions. How else is he going to know if a player like Sam Jones is going to be able to cut it at international level, but he's not training at that sort of intensity? So I don't think Eddie, in this instance, has done anything wrong whatsoever. I think it's much more above him in the way where these sort of things, if you're not allowed to do full contact training, then put this in the agreement, because just about every single other stipulation is in there. Similarly, the timing of the camp's probably not best, though, in the run-up to the Champions Cup. I can understand why the clubs are so annoyed. I feel for them in this sort of regard when you give your players away with, you trust them with England and then they come back with Jack Noel injured, Anthony Watson and Sam James. You're going to be a bit miffed. But it's one of these sort of things where it's the perfect storm at the moment. But I think it's a problem which is probably higher up above Eddie rather than through his direct doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does, mate. Well, it reminds me of a conversation, you know, after the All Blacks held up the Springboks on the weekend, Nick Mallett was speaking to Supersport and he talked about the New Zealand system where we pick our All Black side out of five franchises, out of five Super Rugby teams, which does make it easier for the All Black selectors and coaches to get around those teams, to see their players and to maybe impart a little bit of wisdom on the coaches or to give the coaches a steer on what they're looking for from these players. Harder for Eddie Jones when you've got so many clubs, so many players spread across the country to get around every club. Also, because he doesn't contract the players directly, he's got no say in how they're coached by those coaches. Nick Mallett said he wanted to see South Africa go to that New Zealand system where players are centralised, coaches can get around the franchises and everyone is rowing in the same direction, if you know what I mean. But that's never going to happen for Jones, is it? So how else is he supposed to get this squad together? How else is he supposed to see them all in one place?
You're absolutely spot on there. And it's interesting on that Nick Mallett piece as well, that South Africa this week are going into their, what they call the coaching indaba, which is where they're going to be bringing together all the various minds from South African rugby, so the chief execs, the head coaches, Alistair Kurtzey, and then Brendan Venter's sort of chairing this. But they all kind of put their collective brains trust together, put the band back together for one last tour, and then try and work out what to do with South African rugby, because having watched that game on Saturday, I watched it almost with a tinge of sadness, and because, you know, that test, the New Zealand test in South Africa is normally the best test of the year. It's closely fought, comes down to the last couple of plays. The standard of rugby is on another planet. But at the moment, I mean, the Springboks could play New Zealand on Mars. All Blacks don't have a spacesuit and they'll still win because they're just so far above anyone else at the moment that regardless of what happens, they've got the perfect system, even down to the MITRE 10 Cup. There's players coming through there. There's something really, you know, something tangible to play there, which still seems to have a lot more significance and kept its real sort of excitement levels than the Currie Cup, which is just kind of, it just slips under the radar now, which again is a crying shame because, you know, remember the days of, you know, the 95 Rugby World Cup with the Springboks then. That was all around Currie Cup rivalry.
Yeah, absolutely.
The interesting bits they had to break down within the camp as well.
Yeah. No,
and that's just gone as well. So in terms of England, now, when before Eddie took the job, he spoke to ESPN and said, look, whoever is the next England coach, aka Mr. E. Jones, has to bring in sensible contracts. And then immediately when he has unveiled, he suddenly realised that that is slightly unlikely. So he's got, this is the best system he's for an England coach so far, the most access. But with it comes these sort of caveats, these pitfalls, which is where they expect players not to get injured.
Well, let's stick with England for the moment, Tom, because I know you're very close to that side and you follow them very closely, but let's talk through these November internationals. So where do you see the biggest risk for Eddie Jones in terms of perhaps suffering his first loss in charge?
I think Argentina, perhaps, mainly because watching them on Saturday, they play such off-the-cuff rugby that there's an unpredictability about them. I so admire their playing style, this sort of this blind... not blind, that's unfair. There's more sort of, again, it's heads up. They just go from anywhere, offloading off their own try line, which perhaps in a test match might be deemed perhaps pushing the envelope a little bit too far. But if they get on their straps, get a really fit team together. I mean, this was Argentina team on Saturday. It was without so many players. And there's no Hernandez, there's no Issa, there's no Lobe, no Montero, no Ayerza. The list just goes on and on and on. Mm. But they still really play well. They had a fly-off who couldn't, you know, hit a barn door. So, but yet they still managed to keep Australia ticking away. I think Argentina might pose the biggest threat. And then Australia are an interesting package because for so long this year, we've been waiting for the real Wallabies to stand up. That team we saw get to the final of last year's World Cup. They haven't really appeared to be close to that level or anywhere near it, really. I really think they miss Adam Ashley Cooper and Matt Gitzel in those sort of key decision roles and also in that influence. But if they, you know, if they get a nice little run together throughout November, then December 3rd at Twickenham will be a fantastic game and they will want nothing more going to end Eddie's unbeaten run, if it still is at that stage by then.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm really looking forward to these November internationals, but I think it just gives us a chance to maybe refocus on the strength of the hemispheres relatively. There's been so much talk about that All Black side, and yes, I understand they're putting on the points. Yes, I understand they're playing a brand of rugby that certainly works for them. But, you know, Mark Reason wrote a column here this week saying, you know, it's the mediocrity of the opposition that make the All Blacks look great. This becomes, for me, a defining northern season for European rugby, for Ireland's and the Scotland's and the England's and the French to maybe make a statement against the Southern Hemisphere. If they go and lose to teams like South Africa and Australia and Argentina, who have been soundly whipped by the All Blacks all season long, what does that say about the state of the North?
Absolutely bang on. I think the crying shame is that we're not going to see England versus the All Blacks as well, because I think that's the test which everyone would love to see now, just to see exactly where England are in relation to the best team in the world. But, I mean, we are looking at an underpowered South Africa still trying to find their feet. We're looking at Australia, who are going through a stage of evolution. Looking at Argentina, who haven't got a single one of their European-based players. So immediately, they've lost about 2.5 million worth of caps. And then if the Northern Hemisphere teams, who have kind of had a nice little run in at the start of the season, aren't knocking over these Southern Hemisphere teams who are at the end of a long season, then I think, yeah, questions have to be asked. And especially this in the Lions year, when everyone's looking towards building towards June.
Oh, totally.
What's going to be a really, really fun 6 weeks. But the Lions can have any hope of knocking over the All Blacks, and everyone has to be playing the best rugby of their careers without the slightest injury and, you know, finding that extra 2%.
It's going to be a great season. Tom, as always, my friend, thanks for joining us on the Rugby Pass podcast today. Enjoy the Champions Cup this weekend, and then we'll get back into the Premiership. And I note with interest, your Bath side has only lost once under Todd Blackadder and Tumbai Matson. The good times are rolling in Bath, my friend.
You know what? It's going all right. So I was there on Friday night.
Enthusiasm, Tom. Enthusiasm.
It's been one of the, you know, when you watch them for 20 years and they've won one trophy since I was just about to leave junior school, you kind of have seen a few of these dreaded fall storms. But the players are loving it under Todd and Tabai. Todd and Tabai, I met Tabai a couple of weeks ago, and he's just absolutely bought into Bath. The players buying into what they're doing as well. A real sense of optimism around the place. The only problem is they've got a small squad. At the moment, just about everyone's injured. I'm maybe playing on Thursday night for them as things are standing on the wing. And that's kind of where we are at the moment. But it's, I mean, they played the whole season so far without Faletau, without Dave Tenson, without Francois Lowe, without Matawalu, these sort of players. And that's a hell of a lot of experience there. Charteris got injured after two games. They're perhaps a tight head short. We've got Henry Thomas who's doing really well. But, you know, there's not a lot of depth behind him. Definitely a couple of inside centres shorts. Got Robbie Fruin arriving in a couple of weeks. Maybe Ben Tapawai. And then we've got Dan Bowden, who's such a gifted player, but has had a really bad run of injuries recently. But when he gets back, when everyone gets fit, then Bath will be in a pretty good place. I think, judging by the fact that they had such a big sort of start again mode, it's a big turnover in the summer with their two inside centres leaving, the coach leaving, that where they are at the moment is the best they could have hoped for. And the best they could have hoped for is perhaps a little bit harsh. It's what they could have really hoped that actually happened. And it's what they're doing at the moment. Tabai and Todd are doing so well there. The players are happy. And when that all happens, everything starts to click.
I'm looking forward to seeing you on the wing, Tommy. It's been a long time. Thanks again for joining us on the Rugby Pass podcast. Rugbypass.com, all the Champions Cup action, all of the November internationals, and so much more. Join up today, rugbypass.com.